Clubroom Backstage.
Anya Schneider is talking to DJ Rebecca, one of the most powerful women in techno and founder of the Me Too for the Music Initiative.
The woman is consenting to be naked, like, you know what the Berlin clubs are. We see lots of women that just want to take their tops off.
Welcome to a new episode of Clubroom Backstage. Today with one of a woman, which I don't know personally so well, but which I admire already since years, because I'm impressed by her honesty, power, about her knowledge, and of course about her skills. Welcome Rebecca, label owner of Elements and Decoy Records, and with releases on Zoma, Naked Land, Seal Air, to name only a few. There was a lot of more. 2018, she was voted for the best producer from DJ Mag. Born and raised in Birmingham, she's already since 20 years in the electronic music scene. An artist with a lot of power, strength, and persistent on her way to find her perfect sound. Ready to make no compromise if it comes to her own career. But for me, the most impressive action beside of her music was definitely her honesty to talk about her way to get sober and the life-changing moments with it. She helped a lot of people with her words and her experience and her courage to speak out. And Rebecca did it again and called our industry and wrote an open letter to the dance industry in light of sexual assault and rape allegations. Me Too for the Music. A petition where everyone can sign up and share experience and be aware of it, with almost 5,000 subscribers until now. Wow, Rebecca. Hey.
Hey, Anya, thanks for having me.
How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm really good, thank you. How are you?
Yes, I'm good. You look really fit, but I know this because I follow you on Instagram. You look really fresh and good and a lot full of energy. How have you been the weeks after starting this campaign, Me Too for the Music?
I have been very, very busy. It's been a really interesting process because I've learned a lot. Mm-hmm. So each week that goes by, I learn something more about the club industry and the different initiatives that are around it that are really trying to make a difference and make some change. I thought it would be super easy. I thought I would write the letter and then everyone would just jump on. And obviously that's not the case. There's a lot of resistance as well that I'm finding. It's been really positive. There's been a lot of good support.
The initial case or the reason why you started it was the case of Eric Morello. Everyone knows about it. Tell me what made you act so fast, because it took probably 1 week and then you started up to sign the letter.
Yeah, I just saw how like divided we were as an industry, you know, how my male colleagues really, you know, hailed him as a legend and all his good behaviour. And obviously they didn't see the other side of him, which is sometimes the case with, you know, people that have a lot of charisma, you know, they have a dark side too. And his dark side was well known also in the industry. But I am aware that I think that the eulogies that went out, they were really talking about his drug use. You know, he was an addict. He was, you know, I'm an addict too. So I kind of relate to that part. But to put all of that into eulogies and then really not acknowledge that, you know, he was in court, well, he was due in court a few days after his passing for alleged rape, really stood out for me. And then all the arguments on the comment section, it just was really, really hard to see. And it also triggered a lot of stuff for me, because then when I found out that the victim was a female DJ, you know, then it really, really hurt, because it's like she got so much negative comments towards her, like they didn't believe her. Then, you know, obviously the Eric Morello camp had already sort of put inflammatory statements online to really, you know, really put her character under the microscope, which obviously was all lies and it's not true. So and then I connected to that, because I was like, well, I'm a female DJ. Mm-hmm. I've had this stuff happen to me. What is this message? What are we, you know, this is like 20 odd years into my career and we still haven't made progress. Mm-hmm. So that's why I kind of jumped to it and acted very quickly.
Yes, I agree completely, because we could be all really easily in this situation. We know the situations where you play with a male colleague, and of course, maybe afterwards you go for a drink. It's not that you go for an after party, but you still have like this energy in you. Yeah. You don't go home and you want to talk about it. This is completely normal what people are doing when they're coming from a job. And I was also shocked by the male colleagues. They hyped him, and I found it also kind of accepted, because they were all talking about his dark side. So yeah. I was shocked about this too. So I completely understand you. But what was it, something what was shimmering in you since a long time? You want to do it. You had this thing in you already?
Yeah. Basically, the reason I kind of went to it was because, you know, at 17, I was actually raped by a DJ, a local DJ in my city. And when I was 20, 21, I was assaulted by a promoter. So all of these things I've never spoken about publicly, because I didn't really want people to know about that. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's like stuff that you don't talk about because you just want to kind of fit in, you know, as a female artist, you know, you just fit in, you play by the rules, you be good, you know, you don't make too much trouble. So I just played by those rules for so long. But then a few months ago, I put out a call for coaching. So in my, like a lot of time that I have on my hands now, mm-hmm. I thought it would be a really amazing opportunity to give some people mm-hmm. Some coaching guidance. Mm-hmm. And then when I did that, I had so many women contact me with their music, mm-hmm. and then so many talented mm-hmm. women that are potential artists that could come into the scene. And then I just really thought about it, and I was like, hold on a minute, mm-hmm. how can I try and bring these people into the scene knowing that they could, you know, that there's a 90% chance that they're going to be harassed, assaulted, worst case scenario, raped. And I just thought, you know what, I have a responsibility now to do this.
But how you could handle this, beside of your own experience and own history, because I read when you go to this open letter, there are some stories of colleagues, of friends, of female DJs, whatever. And it's quite hard to read this. And I was really touched by some stories. And of course, in my 20 years of being in the business, I saw this and I was really asking myself, hey, why I looked away, why I accepted somehow, you know, you're doubting even yourself, but how you can handle this beside of your own experience, these stories. I mean, probably they were asking for help. I think even not only the girls who wrote on the side, I think you got a lot of messages from other one private. They were not ready to speak out.
Yeah. It's just really heartbreaking to know that, you know, these experiences are really common. And I'm with you, you know, not sort of standing up for this before, but I think it's just the whole industry. And I think men are scared to talk about it as well. You know, they're in fear of their careers, as well as, you know, women are scared of their careers, like, you know, speaking out. And this culture of silence really needs to change. You know, we need to be more vocal. We need to protect the more vulnerable.
Yeah, but of course, with all the social media and all this role what we are playing now, especially when you're long time in the business and fighting so hard to be there where you are. And was there any moment where you were afraid of prejudice for this? Because it's getting, sometimes it's getting viral and it can get back not the way you want it.
I mean, the fear that I probably had of coming out earlier would have been, you know, bringing up my modelling and the stuff that I did in, you know, from 19 to like 23 or something, because that's the only thing that people could really use against me. Mm-hmm. But then when I really thought about it, I was thinking, well, you know, if I, you know, just because I did modelling and stuff, that still doesn't mean it's right to be assaulted, if that makes sense.
Was this, back in your history, quite difficult when you changed from your job, actually what you did, to finance your career as a DJ, as a techno producer? Was it in the beginning quite difficult for you that man treated you like, come on, she's easy to have because she did this?
I presume so. And you know, I always say it's a double-edged sword. So with my modelling, it got me noticed very quickly. But then on the flip of that, I didn't get taken very seriously. Mm-hmm. And obviously, yeah, I think probably, you know, the assault that I experienced with a promoter, probably you thought that I would be easy because of the modelling past, and he probably booked me for that reason, unfortunately.
Yes, we all saw this. And of course, you made your way out there and proved it. And there's another Rebecca that, you know, which was really good. But honestly, to speak now between you and me, we are both long time in this business. We saw also the other way around, you know. The DJ booths often filled with like a beautiful girls who use this to be there because they were flirting, they're touching, because they just want to be close to the DJs. For me, it was always a question. Why is a male DJ so attractive for being just a male DJ and even he acts stupid? Why this is something where you're going to be close to, you know? For me, I never understood this. Sometimes I thought it's maybe because of the alpha animal theory, because they a lot of people following them and they want to be close to them. I have no idea, and it's still happening. And this is something where I am super annoyed. I mean, when we are playing, we don't have a bunch of beautiful young boys almost
naked. Sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah, but they're mostly gay, unfortunately. Not unfortunately, but it's nice.
Yeah.
But I think there's another way around. I saw also, I mean, if we talk about offers, what we got, and I work with a lot of male DJs, and sometimes when they came home one day, they told me what they got, and I got always little papers, and would you like to marry me? And I was like, okay, this is more respectful. So I saw also the other way around from fans to myself, but it's still happening, the fact of that we have these girls. What are you thinking about it? Why?
I think it's a power thing. You know, women, mm-hmm. and maybe it's the patriarchy that's set up and the whole thing of, you know, being attracted to power. Women are attracted to power. I definitely have fallen into that category. You know, I've seen DJs that have been so in the flow that I'm like, it's something mm-hmm. attractive about them. I'm kind of pulled into that. Not anymore. Mm-hmm. Not for a long time. I have my own DJ boyfriend at home now, so I'm all good.
Enough.
But yeah, I think it's a power thing, and that's the problem. It's like this power, and I think with the DJs that are predatory, you know, it's an abuse of power because they know they can have pretty much any girl, and they surround themselves with people that say yes mm-hmm. all the time. And the minute they hear no, they don't understand what no means. So it's like then they go across the line. And then, you know, I've got so many stories and I've heard so many stories recently about this abuse of power that is pretty much it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I like the fact, I never thought about it, that they have so many people around them which always saying yes. But it's true, absolutely. But also we are working in a really hedonistic environment, you know, techno is sex, clubs are places to let go, to make new experience, and even to open up your mind. Sex is almost everywhere, and dancing is sex. And actually also there is a kind of a body cult, which I can feel is actually new because people wearing less clothes. So I like it somehow. I mean, I saw it already in the 90s somehow. It's coming back now, which is I find interesting. But on the other hand, I'm a little bit afraid that the role of a woman goes back, because I don't know how you see this new environment, this new naked cult somehow.
I think it always comes down to consent. The woman is consenting to be naked, like, you know what the Berlin clubs are. We see lots of women that just want to take their tops off mm-hmm. and it's freedom, but that's the same freedom that we're trying to bring everything back to. But just because they have their tops off and they're completely hedonistic doesn't necessarily mean that they're advocating for harassment or assault. Mm-hmm. It's just like we really need to create the safer space that is okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's okay to meet other people in this environment. And, you know, it's about consent. It's about asking. It's about, you know, it's about asking to get the consent. And if the consent is no, then no is no, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you don't continue to harass somebody after that. And we also have to put a bit of responsibility on the venues. If we're trying to promote this hedonistic, you know, freedom mm-hmm. and, you know, like anything goes culture within our clubs, then the venues have got a little bit of responsibility to make sure that is a safe space. Mm-hmm. And that means, yeah, to have people that, mm-hmm. that are there to keep an eye on things mm-hmm. that people are aware that they can report to if there is harassment, mm-hmm. you know. So I think we can grow and we can learn and we can change and adapt to create these safer spaces.
Do you see this new hedonistic environment or movement really close to the new techno industrial? Sorry, I have to ask this. But I see this mostly on, and actually yeah. It was always there. It's not that I remember back in the days when I still went to Berghain, this was for me a really safe place, even at 8 o'clock in the morning. You know, downstairs it was the safest place I could be. And of course, I always had clothes on, but I felt completely safe, you know. So, but I can see this now with the new generation. I find it quite cool and nice, but do you think it is belongs to the music?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that, like my, you know, I like it too. I like it when the guys have got their tops off and they're swinging the t-shirts around the head. But I think it's because the music, you know, that I play and others do too is so fast that, you know, it just ends up being really sweaty. And mm-hmm. But you're right, it reminds me of the 90s, of you know, course. Why I love techno music, because it was that freedom.
I know, you started in Birmingham. And actually, when we met the first time, you said, oh, I know you're from, we met once in Birmingham. I have no idea, I couldn't remember this. But it was quite interesting, because when I read your story and what I really like and where I was really impressed, because you always play this techno sound, you know, now it's really popular. You're not stepped on and say, hey, this is now the new sound, I'm in it. I think you've been to really rough times, because I can imagine there were some times where people said to you, hey, come on, don't play 140 BPM, especially during the minimal time zone, like, you know, but you always were stuck on this. So how you could handle your feelings in this time that you stayed in your sound. I think there was a lot of ups and downs, and to be convenient about yourself. Confident, sorry.
Not yeah, confident. It was just, I think because I had already sort of played a little bit of house music and really kind of sold out in the early 2000s, like I didn't really want to play that music, but I just played it, you know, I was young, I was naive, and I kind of just went with it just for the gigs. I knew that this time round, you know, after I'd put all the time and effort into producing music and to create a sound, I knew that I was going to stick with techno. And mm-hmm. to be honest, I have got progressively faster mm-hmm. and harder, but mm-hmm. it's, yeah, you're right. Like having managers in my ear going, oh, if you just play a little bit softer mm-hmm. and, you know, play me Chris Leaving. Like at some point I wasn't allowed to play before him anymore. Because I would push it a little bit faster, a little bit harder, and then he...
You are not the only girl where this happens with big other DJs. I heard this many, many times from a lot of female colleagues.
It's like, put me on last then, you know, I'm good there. But it's like, no, your profile isn't big enough to play last yet. It's like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, so I think, you know, I don't like being told what to do. That's definitely a factor. So if someone's in my ear saying, oh, you need to do this, you'll be really big if you just play more commercial... I'm like, no, I've heard that before and it didn't make me happy. So I will do and play how I like, because at the end of the day, we have to make ourselves happy and then the crowd buzz off that more than anything.
Do you think the DJs changed when you started in Birmingham? I think you heard Surgeon, this was your leaders where you were like, oh my God, this is something mind-blowing. Yeah. So, and of course, you met a lot of DJs, especially now with this new techno hype. Do you think it's changed to be a DJ compared to back then?
Yeah, I mean, my first real love of like dance music that just blew my mind was techno. But when I bought all the records, I just did not know how to play them and mix them. And it was like, what's going on? And obviously, if you listen to like Dave Clark back then, it was just like, you know, crossfading straight in and a lot of cutting and stuff rather than how we play now, which is more layered and blending and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think the technical parts changed a lot. And the DJing, I don't know. I think it's pretty similar. Like, mm-hmm. I think the idea to get out of your city is you got to make music, you got to get onto labels, you know, the process of doing that. What I liked about techno in comparison to house was that the techno guys generally seem to not have as many ghost producers mm-hmm. than the house scene. You know, and back in the 90s, you know, it wasn't anything to be ashamed of mm-hmm. to have a ghost producer. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, it's that part, it kind of baffles me a little bit. But yeah, I think now it's, you know, the turnover is quite quick right now, I think.
And when CLR gets broke up, or there was like a pause because of Chris Leaving's album, he was here last week and he told us about it. How was this for you? How you could handle this? Because it was a first anchor. You came to Berlin. I think everything changed with the entrance of CLR and Michi and getting on there.
I mean, CLR was my, you know, it was a real dream for me to become part of a collective. Mm-hmm. You know, in the mid 2000s onwards, it was the girls' positioning was to become part of a label, and I really, that was my main aim. For me, the closure of the label was, yeah, it happened quite suddenly, and I thought we still had further to go mm-hmm. as a label. I think the music hadn't really broken properly. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's not my label, it's Chris's mm-hmm. label, so he has to make mm-hmm. his mind up. But then I also found that actually when we were that close, doing nights all the time, it became very, very competitive, and I didn't really feel competitive. I was like one of the new people, so I was just, you know, happy to be there. Mm-hmm. But I think there was a little bit of competitiveness, and in the end, that's always the ugly side of these, you know, mm-hmm. labels with nights and mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. artists that are like scheduled every couple of releases a year. As you know, for Mobley, yeah, it's the same.
Of course. But it was, on the other hand, it was a good thing for you because everything changed in a good way after this.
Yes.
So sometimes it's when a door closed down, there's a new thing open. So for me, it was the same to close down Mobley to get to find myself and refresh and concentrate a little bit more on myself. So for you, it was the best, actually.
Yeah, I worked through some feelings. I created an album. I worked with a label, and I worked with Soma now, who are just super lovely to work with. And, you know, they're always really supportive. And, yeah, just to find my own way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then to do my own label, you know, it gave me that, you know, maybe I wouldn't have done that mm-hmm. as quickly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you always adapt. You mm-hmm. have to.
And it's so funny that you said this. I remember 2000, around this, there was a lot of labels and they put always a girl on the lineup, you know. There was these times. Nowadays, thank God, these times are over. The girls putting now, hopefully, the boys on the lineup. And I remember these times really good. And so I had to really smile about this. But actually, I also want to talk about this because you are really keen to hold up a course about your life, sports, mental health, about veganism, everything. And of course, now with the campaign Me Too for the Music. But is this the actual job for a DJ? What is the job? Playing records or to speak out and to really talk about things, topics which are important?
Probably whatever the DJ feels comfortable with. The role can be whatever you choose it to be. You know, at the core, it's yes, of course, we're there to entertain people. Mm-hmm. Techno and dance music is always very political, mm-hmm. Where it comes from to a degree. So I think it's important to also, you know, be promoting something. Like for me, it's always about the music. So for all of the stuff that I discuss, you know, like, you know, mental health, mm-hmm. is it drugs, alcohol, now, you know, sexual assault in the industry. Mm-hmm. It always comes back to, it's just all about the music. It's like, mm-hmm. let's bring it back to that. What's important? So everything I do and talk about is always to try and keep the essence of what's important in that mm-hmm. sense. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, different artists are comfortable doing different things. Everyone has a different fight at mm-hmm. the moment. You know, we're either fighting to save a venue, we're fighting for Black Lives Matter, more artists to come through, sexual harassment.
To survive in the end of during this crisis.
Exactly. It's like, choose your battles.
But how are you doing? How are you? You played some gigs lately, no?
Yeah, I did a few gigs and hopefully got one more on the 30th, and then that will probably be it for, like, I don't know, forever, maybe.
Yeah, you never know. Even the thing on the 30th, you can't plan anything longer than the next 3 days, in my opinion. But what I was seeing, and I find it really funny, and to talk about something positive and nice, you built up a camper.
Yes.
Whoa, what's this? I like this. And you were driving through, you've been to Switzerland with the camper.
Yeah, the first gig that I mean, we went traveling to North Spain. Mm-hmm. So my boyfriend likes to surf. I like to go to the mountains. So that was a really good compromise. And then on the way back, we stopped off in Switzerland and I did a gig. And then the first gig we did, I got broken into in the van. But yeah, I kind of...
Scheiser.
I wanted to do just wanted to get close to the mountains. Mm-hmm. And then I thought it'd be really nice to have a camper van. And, you know, we fly all the time. We're in hotels. At some point, it kind of all blurs into one. So, like, mm-hmm. what is the next experience? Mm-hmm. And the next experience is, like, road trips.
Yeah, this is super. But did you plan already another road trip?
I am hoping to go on Sunday.
Oh.
Maybe. I've been to Saxony or Sächsische Schweiz, if I can say that right.
Sächsische Schweiz. Even I can say it.
Good.
Yes, it's nice, yeah.
And I've been there three times and it's the closest place to Berlin to get to some higher mountains or rocks. So I'm hoping to go this week, but before I put the van into its like winter home.
And are you busy in the studio too at the moment?
I am not at the moment.
No, but it was because you have so much to do with for the music. It's not that you'll be in kind of a depressive thing, because
no.
I talked to a lot of artists. For them, it was like really life-changing and they didn't feel so good to go to the studio and have this creative energy, actually.
Yeah, I mean, the gigs feed into you being creative because you've got music then to play and try out at the gigs. I understand that. And I did in the beginning. I got some EPs ready, and then because I had two coming, I thought, you know what, I could take a bit of time off. But that's my flow anyway. I'm either all in or all out for a bit. So at the minute, there's a couple of sketches I've got floating around. That so I know that when I go back in, I can do it. But I am doing something at the minute, which is for producers. So I'm going to launch a producer challenge. And the idea is that I'm going to take these producers through 10 days of making a track a day. In each day will be a different creative way. And I think I'll launch that properly in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay, this sounds really brilliant. I think a lot of people are going to do this. But honestly, what do you think when we have this crisis? I ask everyone here because I had so many different answers and I find it still interesting. Do you think the music will change after this? I mean, even with this hardcore techno, I have some ideas which sound will be not staying over this. You know, what do you think?
From what history shows us is that after the maximal, there will be a minimal. The minimal that will probably come back won't necessarily be as slow as the minimal that happened in the early 2000s. So I'm predicting it's going to be fast minimal. And it's already kind of there. You know, you've got this sort of the Chris Liberator sort of sound, which, you know, the snare drum's there and it's fast and it's kind of there already. And then there'll just be a lot of people that will probably focus more on the sound design rather than the, you know, hard house kind of vocals and stuff. That's that's really like on the edge of being really commercial. But it's fun. The kids love it. So that's my prediction. And I think it's always, I always say it's the yin and yang. So you have, when there's always something really maximal, then, you know, what's the opposite of that?
Like interesting. Because last week when I had Chrissy, he said, I don't know how long I can play this sound. I had this discussion even with Corbusier. I think men asking themselves more and be not so sure. They're always like a little bit insecure about them and their role in the whole scene. Okay, let's come back to everyone who wants to subscribe, or this would be great for the music, Me Too for the Music. And how many stories you have there already from it's not only women. I saw also some men writing stuff.
We have a story from a guy and he was assaulted by another guy. And I'm hearing some other stories about, unfortunately, in Berlin, which is really heartbreaking as well, from guys. So it's you know, it's not, it's like, that's what I think. It's not a gender thing. It's not gender specific. It's power
everywhere.
Thing. It's about power. And yeah, like anyone that's listening, what that wants to sign the letter, basically you're signing the letter to demand that the industry changes, that we make changes, we demand that we end the culture of silence, and then what that does is gives us power to go to the clubs and the promoters and the DJs for them to sign up to a pledge which commits them to changing as well.
But you work also some other projects with the project Me Too for the Music, because I saw a video last night. So you're going to talk with a lot of initiatives. You're going to start a podcast series, everything. So what's going on? Can you say a little bit already?
The idea is that once we've got the pledges signed, you know, Awakenings is already signed, Neopop in Portugal. And I think that's just, it's just the tip of the iceberg right now. So what we would do then is, like, when we know that Awakenings is opening, again, we can then join them with an initiative in Amsterdam that wants to train them and maybe be able to put materials into the festival or the venue. And it's just about joining the initiatives to the promoters.
Yes.
And And then, yeah, with the podcast, I think it's because people are unsure about what we're doing and, you know, we can go more into detail. Like, you know, you have to give me some hints afterwards for podcasts.
Of course.
but yeah, just, you know, each week I will, you know, maybe talk to one of the ambassadors or an initiative or maybe a promoter that's already doing a lot of work around this area. And so we just can understand it a bit more and like see the action part because it's one thing talking about it, but without action, it's just words, you know.
What is exactly the role of the ambassadors? What are they doing? How do you find them?
The people that are generally more vocal, you know, that have been, that are standing up for this and basically just to use their platforms to spread the message, get more people to sign the letter. And also, because I've got lots of press requests at the moment for the campaign, just to bring in different voices and opinions. It can't just all be my voice, you know, and it's really important that we have allies and, you know, already we have male allies, you know, Richard Horton's pretty much stood up and, you know, wants change. You know, Terry, who's from Beatport, maybe people that, you know, artists will know who he is. Darko Essa, he's stood up as well. You know, I've got a lot of good guys around me. It's not every guy is bad, you know. There's guys in the industry that are absolute diamonds.
Yes, it's true. Rebecca, thank you so much really for having this time. I wish you a great trip with your camper. So I want to see the nice pictures with you in the Sächsische Schweiz. Thank you really for coming. And please take a look, sign up. The letter is really important for everyone, for us. It's Me Too for the Music. There's a website and you're going to find an open letter there. So please stand up and make our world a little bit more
safer.
Yeah. Rave safe, please. Absolutely. Danke.
Thanks, Anja.
Clubroom Backstage.
Produced at Blackout Studios.